Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Brace for impact. Cross the line.
This is my destiny. It is the truth.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Ain't made no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Ain't made no rain from the track.
Man, we skip a week and I screw up the intro with my Brace for Impact theme there at the beginning.
Man. I don't know what the hell that was, but I ain't crossing no lines. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that was my and there's so much AI in that song, you could kill a small village. So,
oh shit, yeah. I just lost my camera. Sorry, man. I don't know what just happened.
Oh,
I just
lost my camera. You're all good. Here, I'll just hey now. Yeah, hey now. It's the Mike and JD show. I am your host, Mike Gilbert. I played the wrong entrance. I'm leaving that in, by the way, on the. On the audio. I think I deserve the punishment for that. And plus, like, it takes me extra time to like clip out stuff, so I'm not gonna do that. We'll just keep that in. But
we've been off for a week and you fucked up the intro. I can't get my camera working. We're right back to where we always are. Least professional show on this network.
Yeah. But we are back. JD, it's good to see you, my man. Been a couple of weeks. How was your Memorial Day weekend last weekend?
God, that was last weekend. Great, yeah. Actually. Last Friday was the last day of school. So year four for me in the books. The wife and I took a nice little trip. We went up to a Wyolissing State Park in Wisconsin. Never been there before. Nice. It was absolutely beautiful. So we got to do some hiking. Quite enjoyed that. Yeah, it was great. Came home and then I was ready to, because like finals week of school is really hard to train. I kind of took a couple weeks off after the open, you know, kind of let my body heal a little bit was the plan. I got a strained MCL. It's feeling better now. So I was going to get right. Like, so the week of finals is really hard for a teacher to like do anything else other than, because there's so much other than just grading that has to get done. There's so much little shit. So I'm like, I'm just going to kind of lean down this week and I'll go back hard next week. And then I immediately threw my back out on Monday. I was fatigued on the very last set of kettlebell swings. I kind of overexerted it and the back went. So I was in and out of the chiropractor all week. I've been miserable. So physically, but it's been pretty good otherwise. How about you?
Yeah, it's been good. Last weekend I was up in Virginia and we had some friends that I was stationed with in Hawaii, and our kids like went to school together. They were our neighbors. Actually, we lived in the same quadplex there on base on Hickam Air Force Base. So they're stationed over at Langley in Virginia. And so it's like a 6-hour drive. So we drove up there for the weekend. It was their daughter's birthday. So she had just turned 7. So that was cool. My wife and his wife, they're like best friends. So it was nice. We haven't seen them in a couple of years. So military is kind of a small world. So you're within driving distance, you know, you try to link up every now and then. And for Virginia, really cool. I did not like realize like all the historical stuff that they had there. Like we drove past the Jamestown settlement and all kinds of different cool stuff like that. They have a bunch of different museums, like a Revolutionary War Museum and a Civil War Museum. They were closed, but we're already like trying to make plans to go check those out. And they have like a Pocahontas State Park there, which sounds cool. Like I love stuff like that. So
yeah, me too.
Definitely planning on, I never thought I'd be like, I want to go see Virginia, but I think I want to go see Virginia here pretty soon again.
I went to Virginia Beach twice. Once when I was a little kid, my uncle used to live there, and I took some kids out to a tournament there probably about 12, 13 years ago, but I never really got to like dig into like actual Virginia. So that's on the list, stuff I got to do.
Yeah. And so I thought that, so we're going to Langley Air Force Base. I thought that's where CIA headquarters was at. Because they always talk about we got to go back to Langley.
Yeah.
No, it's not at Langley Air Force Base. There's a city called Langley outside of Washington, D.C., which is like 2.5 hours away from Langley Air Force Base. So I got there and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go check out. Because I had this whole gimmick planned because there's a couple of guys on Twitter that always say I'm part of the CIA because I was Air Force and I know where the UFOs are. So I planned on taking a picture in front of CIA headquarters. Like, I'm just at the office today, everybody, you know, just like a funny thing. And it turns out it's 2.5 hours away from Langley Air Force Base, completely different part of the state, which I was sad about.
You know, I also found similar. I discovered because when we were in the state park, you're on the Mississippi River and you can see into three states. And there's a park directly across from the river from the Mississippi in Iowa called Pike's Peak. And I went, well, that sounds familiar. There's another Pike's Peak in Colorado named after the same freaking guy who actually named it after himself. So I'm like, yeah. Why would you do that? Why would we have two things named the exact same thing? Like, that's confusing. Same instances. Why would you have two Langleys 2.5 hours away from each other? That's just confusing.
Yeah, it's super confusing. And the people that started the country, like in North Carolina and in Virginia, like the original settlers, mm-hmm. They went up and down the Eastern Seaboard naming every city the same. Like, there's so many different Yorks. You know, like all of it, like Williamsburg, like we have them in the Carolinas too. I was like driving through these towns, like there's so many towns in North and South Carolina that are the same names as what's in Virginia. Like, there's zero originality there.
I've been to York, Pennsylvania. It's a dump.
Yeah. I live in York, South Carolina in York County. Yeah. And there's it's just all up and down the states or all up and down the Eastern Seaboard. Like, nobody has any originality.
I guess they can't all be as creative as Davis Junction, Illinois. So, you know.
Yeah, but man, we got a lot to talk about. It's been a couple weeks. First, did you get a chance to see Double or Nothing, and what'd you think?
I did. Liked it. I watched it late because we were traveling that week. So I was really glad we didn't have a show and didn't have a review to do. So I actually feel like, I have some freedom to kind of ease into this show. What a great fucking show. Like,
yeah.
I know. Okay. Yes, it's long. Yeah. Boo, long shows. Boo, getting your money's value. But, you know, I just loved it. I loved everything on there. I liked the heel turn. I thought the Kevin Knight heel turn, when I thought about it, it didn't come out of nowhere, but at the time it kind of came out of nowhere. Like, I think Kevin Knight's got a lot of freaking potential. Like, I'm very excited to see where this goes with him. Like, Max and Darby have this like epic feud now that will last years. And again, Darby will beat Max again someday with that headlock takeover. It's going to be a thing for the next couple years. Like, example, John Muse sent us in our group. Oh no, you put it in the group chat today. This Dusty Rhodes, Terry Funk death, Texas death match from 1989, right?
Yeah.
Just like that's something that you can go back to for years and years and years. It's going to be Darby Allin and MJF. I just thought the show was excellent, man. I loved it.
Yeah, I did too. And I got to highlight this comment from our homie XWF here. Okada versus Takeshita was match of the night. And I agree. I loved that match so much. There was a lot of good matches. I thought there was some like good matches, like the Owen Hart tournament match. Like, I like Samoa Joe versus Will Ospreay, and of course, great. Like Swerve and Bandito was great. And there was a lot of great stuff on there. But I just thought that the story with Okada and Takeshita, and it's just been building for so long, and that they finally got to it. And then the Fletcher, who was already a heel, but he went like more heel,
turned healer.
Yeah, he became even more heel. I thought that was pretty well done. And I put out a tweet earlier in the week. It's like, I don't think enough people are talking about that match, and which has kind of been, I wouldn't say an issue, but like they got a lot of spoils up there in AEW, where a match that is as good as Okada and Takeshita is not really getting a lot of play like later in the week, despite the fact that it was probably match of the night.
I think Okada and Takeshita is a match for your super work rate nerds, right? Like, it has a good story strong. They've been building it up for probably about a year now. Like, but I think that's something that appeals more to, I don't know, maybe fans that listen to shows like ours or that really get into the Observer, as opposed to, like, you know, your more storyline driven based stuff that's more yeah, more storyline based, we'll say. But I loved it. I thought it was excellent.
Speaking of storyline based matches and great matches, a match that's probably going to be 5 stars. Like I don't see how it couldn't be. You and I both had the opportunity to watch the Grande Americano's mask versus match. You had the El Grande Americano, the new one, versus the OG El Grande Americano. And I think if you start the match from the entrances and you go all the way through the revealing of Chad Gable as the original Grande Americano and the celebration afterwards, it's one of the best freaking things I've seen in a long time. Just like beginning to end, just tremendous. I thought everything about it was perfect. It worked great. Just like the heat was off the charts. They sold a ton of tickets. Like I just don't, like it was beautiful. It was, to me, it's everything that's great about pro wrestling.
For me, this is, and I don't, I mean, I'm like notoriously anti-Fed, right?
I hate as you should be.
Federation, as I should be, right? Yeah, yeah. But I legitimately don't enjoy much from that company. this was, and again, I have intentionally not watched much over the last 6-7 years. This is the best Federation connected thing. I will always call it the Federation thing that I have seen since Shinsuke Nakamura's debut against Sami Zayn at that WrestleMania takeover. Mm. Like this was, it was excellent. It was, and I can't say I got emotionally invested into it because I haven't been following. I know what's going on tangentially because I know some people, but I haven't been watching all the AAA stuff. But man, it was amazing. It was really good. Like it was really well executed professional wrestling. And the people talk about heat. Like WWE matches usually see like they get up for those entrances and they shut the fuck up during the match and then they pop for the finish. And this was just, I hate the term heat because it's so overused. It's not here. That's what it was. It was just the fans were, and it's Mexico, you know, this is how they are.
Yeah.
They were excited the entire time.
Yeah. They, it's an experience that you really don't get a ton of in the States. Like occasionally, I think AEW gets those matches occasionally, but this was just another level. It was, the heat was just off. Like they loved the Kaiser Grande Americano so freaking much, and they hated the OG so freaking much. And you could tell like they were into it because they like to be a part of the show, but they were into it because they were like just into it. It's just another level in Mexico, which is hilarious because Grande Americano was designed to like make fun of Lucha Libre to get some cheap heat in America, right? And then maybe do some business in Mexico. And like that was the whole idea behind it. He gets to Mexico and he starts to get over a little bit. Chad Gable, he gets hurt. And then Kaiser goes down there. And this guy is really good. And he speaks Spanish. And all of a sudden they flip him babyface. And he's the biggest freaking babyface in the company. Just a tremendous baby face. And that goes back to the thing that I've always said, like I grew up with Mexicans my whole life. And then I've been to several different countries. Mexican culture, they love it when someone that's non-Mexican comes to their house or they come to their country and they adopt parts of their culture and they learn to speak the language a little bit. That means a lot to them. That shows you actually respect their culture, that you're actually taking steps forward to like kind of like, you know, like an olive branch type of thing. And so they respect that. And so they respect the hell out of that guy. And then of course he like hooks up with the ring announcer and like, they're building murals of him everywhere and stuff like that, you know? And it's the same in Japan too. It's the same in Korea. Like when I was stationed there, if I made the effort to learn a little bit of their language when I'm ordering my meal or whenever I'm meeting people I like outside of the base, like that are local nationals, Japanese or Koreans, if I use a little bit of their language and I adopt a little bit of the culture, that just meant a lot to them. And so you can tell that really happened with Ludwig Kaiser, who, one of the most over baby faces in the world right now, just like
crazy,
like
to say.
crazy to say. And I think that, did you hear the story about him making out with his girlfriend in the elevator recently?
Something about that, and he got in trouble with something. Like, explain that to me. So, I've got more thoughts on this whole thing, but please tell me this.
Yeah, yeah. So he was in his in an elevator in his apartment complex or the complex where he lives in Florida, and him and his girlfriend, I guess, were kissing. And as he's about to leave the elevator, there's two different versions of the story. So the version that the police, that was in the police report, was that the guy told Ludwig to have manners. And so Ludwig went crazy and punched him, right? That's what the victim, the supposed victim said. Well, WWE leaks to a friendly media reporter, Raj Geary, that the victim said that he was going to call ICE on his girlfriend and deport her ass. And so that's why Kaiser beat him up. And so he actually gets arrested, goes to jail, gets bailed out. WWE leaks that story, making him this super big baby face. And now he's even more over in Mexico, right? It's the whole, you know, Kerry Von Erich got arrested for drugs. And like they told the media that it was the Freebirds that planted the drugs on him, you know, like that thing, like they played it perfectly. You could tell like that's a, you know, it's probably an Undertaker, Jeremy Borash call. Because like they're old school, they know how to get those reactions. But he became an even bigger babyface, dude. Just tremendous all around.
So this is like this entire thing is like we're gonna say like I go off on how I don't think Triple H is a great booker, and I firmly believe that. And people are telling me that Callaway is an amazing booker because of how this played out. I don't think this is like something booked. I think this is just a perfect confluation of circumstances that they have just really rode smartly. And this is why pro wrestling is different than any other form of storytelling, right? Because like this doesn't work. Like this doesn't happen if they don't buy AAA, right? So they bought AAA. And like Chad Gable, Chaz Betts, has done amazing work any time they've given him something, right? He was the guy in American Alpha, but when they brought him up, Vince was like, oh my God, Jason Jordan. Chaz just stuck around, right? Then they gave him the Shorty G gimmick. Chaz just stuck around. He does that Alpha Academy thing that looks really stupid, just sticks around, gets it to work. This guy can get anything over. And like you said, this Grande Americano thing was just to make fun of Mexicans, right? He's a giant coffee. It's a giant coffee. Now, what I liked about this is the whole thing has always been there's a nice little like twist on wrestling, you know, what's the term I'm looking for here? Like wrestling, you know, little foibles in wrestling, like little tropes. Everyone knows is Chad Gable from Jump, right? Just like the Mr. America thing or the Machines or, you know, Stagger Lee, Yellow Dog, right? There's a long history of we know who's underneath that mask. Right. And that happened with both of these characters. And we've seen this before. We'll have two of them. They're doing a run in AEW right now with El Clone and Hologram when he comes back. They did it with the two Sin Caras where you bring in the original and you have another one and they eventually feud. Right. But usually it's the original one who's the baby face. But this just, again, happened to work because Kaiser needed something to do. The guy can speak fluent Spanish. And then it just... things just keep working out. And he was probably, you know, pro wrestling, never die. You know, he's probably being an asshole and punched a guy. And then WWE's got to leave. Oh, he did it because the guy said he was going to call ICE. And of course they're going to eat that shit up, man. And they're making it great. Like, legitimately, Ludwig Kaiser is the second most over babyface, probably next to Mystico. Like, those are probably number one or number two in the whole damn country. Like, and they just keep... like nobody could have had a long-term plan to book this, right? This is just everything just kind of falls into place and they just rolled with the punches, which is how the best pro wrestling stuff has always been booked. It's like it evolves, it lives, it breathes, it changes, it grows, and you just keep making it work. And that's why you get moments like you got last night. It was fantastic. In smartly booked, not smartly written, but smartly booked. Right, because booking and writing are different things. Like they're putting this together, but like the story in itself, it just kind of grew organically, which could not be planned for. So I gotta tip my cap to them on this, man. It's probably the coolest thing that they've done in years, and it's the least like programmed thing. Like they just let it be, which is probably great. Why I was in AAA, not on the main show, because they kind of let it be its own.
Yeah, anytime the Americanos are on the main shows, they're not really getting those same reactions. And so there were some people that were kind of upset that the mask versus mask match wasn't at WrestleMania, but that thing would have died at Mania. It had to be in Mexico. Yeah.
100%.
And they smartly did not put it in at Mania. They put it in Mexico and it worked perfectly, and you're right. Like it's not something they wrote. It's not something they created. It happened organically. It got over, and they just rode the wave, and they rode it perfectly. A lot of people are giving credit to The Undertaker, which his name's at the top as far as being the booker. But I think Jeremy Borash is probably the guy here, kind of creating the little moments in between, like the, you know, writing the or putting together the little events. Like they did a serenade where he just met with people outside and they had like a parade and like they were singing songs.
Like, so smart.
Can I just say that Mexican wrestling fans are way better than American wrestling fans, like just like 10 times better. Either the fans
in the north of AAA or in the south and the central in CMLL, they're the best. They're so much better than us.
Because I just watched recently the Mystico where they had, it was the anniversary of his theme song where they had the lady come out and sing him to, and that was the greatest thing I've ever seen. Well, up until last night, that was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. It's just there's a lot of cool stuff happening in Mexico right now. And I got to be honest, I thought that WWE was going to go in and make AAA worse than what it was, because AAA was dirt like there for a little bit. Like
they could only go one place. AAA's been bad for a long time.
I was just watching a clip of Vampiro, he's him and Stryker doing the ring announcing, and he's supposed to be doing a run in the match, but he's got the headset on, and they didn't hit his music, and he refuses to go to the ring until they hit his music, and he's like, hit my fucking music, and he's on the headset, and he's yelling at the truck to hit his music, and they're not hitting his music, so he just doesn't go to the ring, and he keeps cussing, saying, hit my fucking music. And then finally, like, they hit his music. He goes, "Bah, fucking time!" And then he does this run in, like. And I just remember one time when Vampiro was on commentary, he farted and it came through the microphone. This is what they bought.
Like, it's like people were worried that they would destroy the time honored tradition of AAA, and it's like, well, I mean, could it be any worse? Like,
I remember.
I'm gonna praise him. I want more jokes first.
Last one. They used to be on Twitch, and I remember watching it on Twitch one time, and like you can actually chat with the announcers. And I remember like a guy named Batman, like they just have a wrestler named Batman. Just like IP be damned. It's just go Mexico. Rogue and the guy got hurt like legitimately, and people were like making fun of the guy, and the announcer's like, hey, please, like this is a man and he got hurt, let's take it seriously. I'm like, and I put in the chat, I was like, his name is fucking Batman and you want me to take it seriously? So many good times watching the old AAA, but this new AAA, like they got rid of the six-sided ring, and looks good.
It does look good. Like, I like that it doesn't look like the WWE product, though. It's not as glossy, right? I don't think they're using the same camera equipment, but they're using stuff that's different. Like, the show looks and feels different than the rest of WWE, which is smart, which is something that I will give TKO credit for. They let things kind of be on their own, where I think that a lot of us have bad tastes with this stuff. We thought a lot of the negative stuff with TNA, too, more on that later, they would just come in and do their own thing and kind of run rush out of the company, because that's what Vince would have done. I think that Nick Khan and company, for all their foibles, that's my word of the day today, for all their issues, they kind of let things exist, and like they're doing right by AAA. They're running the show, but the show is in shambles to begin with. So what they're doing is working. They're letting AAA kind of be AAA, but it's less grody now. Like, they've actually cleaned it up.
They did.
Like, it's not because I think we think of AAA and we think of like Rey Mysterio and Juventud Guerrera in the early 90s, and AAA hasn't been that in a long, long time. Like, it was just a down and dirty kind of blood and guts promotion when Conan was booking it, with, like I said, with Vampiro, and now it's I know it's definitely a WWE product, but it gets to be a different product, right? And it's it's not like AAA has never been traditional Lucha Libre, and they're gonna call it that. The worst part of the show is listening to Corey fucking Graves and JBL. God, I hate WWE commentary so much.
Yeah, I didn't think Corey was bad during this match, but I thought that Rey Mysterio and JBL were atrocious. Like, I just thought they were terrible.
Rey's never been good on commentary. It's not his thing.
Yeah, he didn't have that charisma. I always thought Conan was pretty good, but Conan's in bad health, so he can't really do it anymore. But Ray, it's not really his thing. So one of the big news bits coming out of last night was WWE is going full blown at CMLL. They got some big Mexico shows coming up, and Dave commented on it. Let's get to a little share screen here. Yeah, Dave Meltzer on. So last night, WWE announced two events or three events a week before the anniversary show for CMLL in September. So with CMLL announcing its anniversary show for September 18th at Arena Mexico, WWE has announced a SmackDown on 9/11, Triple Mania on 9/13, and Raw on 9/14, all at ArenaCU.in Mexico City. They are coming after CMLL. That was, I mean, the Triple Mania show typically takes place a month earlier, but they pushed it back to September to compete with CMLL. So they are coming for CMLL for sure.
I'm super, like, these companies, like AAA has always had a strong presence. Like last night's show was in Monterey. Like they've always, they should have shows in Monterey, Tijuana, the north side of the country. Typically they're going to stretch into Mexico City, and it's a very different fan base. Right. Yeah. I think that we try to think of all wrestling fans the way we think of American wrestling fans. And it's not the CMLL fan is very much, it's either the tourists. Cause when you go to Mexico City, you go to Marina, Mexico, right? So yeah. You get a lot of those tourists. Whereas the AAA fan is very much a AAA fan, almost like a WWE fan, where they are pretty much only into AAA. So yeah. I think that WWE is coming for them, but I don't know if it's because I don't think it's going to work the way that it has in the past. Usually when they come in, it's like when they've come into Tokyo, right? And they're like, we're going to do our thing in Tokyo. And like the wrestling world just kind of moves on, right? And it's not that they hate it. Like a lot of people like WWE in Japan, but it's never really a threat to like really eliminate them. And I don't foresee them really trying to eliminate CMLL. They might try to keep buying people out, but I mean, I don't think it's going anywhere.
No, I think they're going to try to cut into their business, but you can tell the people that they were probably coming after some of their talent, and you can tell who those were because AEW signed them to dual contracts. So like that, I mean, that's very clearly who WWE was going after. So, I mean, that would be the way for WWE to get after CMLL would be to take their talent, because CMLL is probably not paying them very much. Like, I know that they're doing a lot of live event business, but I don't think their talent's like making tons of dough over there. So, which is why they're doing the dual contracts with AEW. I think probably a lot of them aren't even on contracts, right? Like,
I think there's unions in Mexico, right? There are wrestling unions. It's a different kind of, the entire wrestling world is different out there, but the exchange rate is still not great, right? I know they pay people in the houses still based in Mexico, but those CMLL shows do really well. So the fact that they are getting subsidized a little bit by AEW and they keeping some of that talent down there is good, because the last thing we need to see is one. I know this is what they want. Like WWE wants a fascist state where everyone is underneath them. They've been trying to get that done for the last 30 some years. And it's bad for wrestling. Like it's bad for competition. It's bad to have less people make money. So, but at the same time, competition is good and it forces everybody to raise their level. I think the wrestling world is in much better shape currently for everybody, but New Japan is better currently than it was in like 2017.
Heat is on, says they only signed La Catalina from CMLL so far. Yeah.
Well, so, La Catalina was kind of like, they were kind of like, you can kind of go. Like they weren't going to push her any harder. So this is like, this is what's great about wrestling, is that it gives you a chance to bounce around, right? And when you get stale, it's like the territories, man. You get stale in one place, you go to the next. Like, we could talk about Cass and Big Bill. Like, he's going to get a chance to revitalize himself after doing pretty much everything he could in AEW and TNA for the last 5 years.
I disagreed that he did everything he could in AEW and TNA. I thought he could have been used better in both companies. I really like him, though. I thought he should have been the TNA champion. So I like him.
You are way higher on him than I am. Yeah. I think he was booked fine in both companies. I think that people see him and they think he could be really a lot better than he is. Like, I think he's fine, but I don't know. I think he's more valuable in that tag team than he ever was on his own.
Personally. Yeah, I think he'll do fine going back to NXT. I don't know. When I heard he was coming available, I immediately was like he should be the TNA champion. Like he should, like they should flip the title from Santana to a heel, and then here comes the big dub W Morrissey and gets the victory in like 9 seconds, like Diesel did on Bob Backlund back in like 94. Like I would have done that. And I just had a run with him. I am real high on that guy. He's not the greatest promo, and I think that's kind of what hurts him. But in the ring, I think he's pretty good. Like he's like, you know, whatever, he's 6'7". But I thought in the ring, like he had gotten way better than what we had seen during his previous WWE run. So I'm very clearly high on that guy. More high than most people are, for sure.
I think the hurt what hurts him is he's got a lot of Kevin. He's always had a lot of Kevin Nash comparisons, yeah. And he's never been as charismatic as Kevin Nash. And at first, he wasn't nearly as good. Kevin Nash wasn't great, but I think that he was better than the Bill we saw in NXT WWE. I do agree he got better in TNA and in AEW, but I think that a guy like him who's a competent big man worker struggles in a place like AEW where it's like, you know, the riches are so rich.
Yeah, and they tall shame in that company. They're not a big fan of the talls. Not they like their guys 6 feet and under in AEW. Champion's 5'7".
And I'm perfectly fine. Is he 5'7"? Yeah. Is MJF only 5'7"? Wow.
I might be making that up. I don't know, but
I think that we overvalue height in professional wrestling. Personally,
for sure.
So, and I think that we people go crazy whenever they see anybody who's tall, like. And I don't know, tall doesn't mean a whole lot other than people notice you, unless you're playing basketball, which is really important.
Right. Well, I mean, tall is good if you can also sell tickets and merch and pay-per-views and all that stuff, which, you know, they don't do that in that company, like the talls anyway. Like they're better off with like 5'10", you know, 200-pound guys that are really, really good. But yeah, it looks like he's heading back. Baron Corbin heading back, probably at a discount. But he got that MLW money. He's like, you know what? I'll take whatever WWE's offering. So he's heading back, and I think we'll see a lot more of that. Like they just shit canned a bunch of people, and they're going to be bringing back some old talls on a discount. And Enzo is already in NXT. He's already there. So
it's kind of like when you pick up some older free agents on the market, right, to round out your roster. You know, they're past their prime, but hey, you need a backup quarterback. You know,
you need
a third tackle on the depth chart. That's how it goes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. So I think the other big story of the week was a cyber agent. Bushiroad was mostly they own 70% of New Japan. Oh, I got the notes. They had 70% shares in New Japan, and they offloaded those shares, and they divided them up between TV Asahi, which already owned a portion, and a cyber agent. So Cyber Agent did not buy in New Japan outright on its own. It's a share transfer where TV Asahi, the long-time broadcast partner, and Cyber Agent, which is the parent company of Abima TV. Cyber Agent also owns Pro Wrestling Noah, Tokyo Joshi Pro, and DDT.
You have to get to that. Cyber Agent owns Cyber Fight, which owns
Cyber Fight. Yeah.
So they're actually separate companies.
Right. New Japan becomes a consolidated subsidiary of TV Asahi with Cyber Agent as a major joint partner. No immediate changes to daily operations, events, or creative are planned. So June 30th is the expected closing execution date. Bushiroad will record an extraordinary gain on the sale in its fiscal year during the end of June 2026. The total transaction value for 70% stake was 22 to 24 million, which is way lower than what I would have assumed. It puts the valuation of New Japan around $32 million, and most of that's divided up between TV Asahi and Cyber Agent. And I did ask a New Japan insider, I'm not going to say the guy's name, but a New Japan insider what he thought. I was actually going to have him on the show, but he said this is the message that I got back. He said Cyber Agent can do whatever they want with the three companies they already have, since they're equal partners with TV Asahi, I think they provide more infrastructure for digital. Nothing changes in the short term. Tanahashi could lose his job. Kidani is no longer a name to use in conversation. So, big changes coming up for New Japan, and it also spells that things were really bleak for New Japan there for a while. It's tough sledding for that company.
Well, people are going to be mocking the sale price, but the simple fact of the matter is that Bushiroad sold it for a lot more than they bought it. So they flipped this thing and made a nice profit. Like our boss, Joe Lanza, made a point to point on the flagship. This is the highest earning period in New Japan history was under the Bushiroad banner. So the problem is New Japan, none of the wrestling companies in Japan handled the pandemic well. But since coming out of the pandemic, they've really struggled to kind of find their way back. A lot of it has to do with like the fact that, again, New Japan is very much dictated on ticket sales. They aren't selling tickets and they can't pay stars. And when you can't do either of those things, it's very hard to stay relevant. So here we go. Like Cyber Agent really likes having these companies. Like I know there was some speculation that WWE would get involved, but WWE is leaving Abima TV for Netflix Japan anyway. So what really is there's a hole in the market now for Cyber Fight that New Japan fills pretty well, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. So they'll probably move over to Abima TV, right? If they're because right now they're just on
They're on TV Asahi. That's different company. Those are different channels. Like again, I don't really know exactly how the Japanese media works, but I know Abima and TV Asahi are separate things. It's so I don't know if you'll get any cross promotional stuff. I'm super curious to see what they say.
Yeah, I'm super curious to see if I know they're separate companies, but if there's going to be more interplay with Pro Wrestling Noah and Tokyo Joshi Pro, and if Stardom's out of the picture altogether because Stardom is staying with Bushiroad. So that I think a lot of things need to get worked out there, but it is interesting.
Japan is so different though, because it's not like we haven't had a lot of interaction in the past between Noah and New Japan Pro Wrestling. Like it's not like it is in America. Like you could have rival companies that still will work together.
It's just
different over there. So I mean, like, will we see more integration with Noah and New Japan? I imagine some, but they're pretty good over there. Like, even when they are working together, like again, the business invasion angle is a Japanese strong. It's a stronghold in that country.
Yeah.
So I imagine you'll see something, but like, I don't think you're going to merge the two companies together. Because I think there's more value. There are people who like Noah, and there are people who like New Japan. So why would you? Why would you cut anything out, you know?
Right. Unless it's more cost effective to put the two companies together. But if both companies are making money, which it seemed like New Japan was profitable. I mean, they had to cut a lot of their spending, but they were profitable. So that's the good news. I don't know what Noah is doing as far as business-wise. I know that Stardom was probably, you know, they were, like as far as percentage-wise, I don't know if they're generating more revenue than New Japan, but as far as percentage-wise, they were probably the most profitable company in Japan going right now. They're doing very well. You know, one of the things that also hurt New Japan was the creation of AEW. AEW had to sign a bunch of stars, and then they became partners, and they did a lot of joint shows. And then now all those New Japan stars are now in AEW because they gotta look at the bright lights in the States and how much those payoffs are, and how good the catering is, and like how well the stars are treated. And naturally, that's a consequence of partnering. When you're the smaller promotion, you're partnering with a bigger promotion. Naturally, your stars are gonna want to go work for them, and that's what happened. Next thing you know, you got Jay White and Will Ospreay and Kazuchika Okada and a lot more top stars. Clark Connors, like all of a sudden, just randomly, like I don't even know why, but he's there. Maybe he could stand in for Hangman as like a body double on some backstage stuff. But he's there, really good friend of the show. But what do you think? I'm not blaming AEW, but it is kind of a consequence of the rise of AEW that New Japan took a big hit.
I mean, I think you can say that, but I think this started really in 2016 when AJ Styles, Carl Gallows, and Anderson and Shinsuke all jumped to WWE, right? Because that really didn't happen a lot before. The year before, 2 years before, Balor / Prince Devitt came over, and you know they signed Kenta from Noah. But I mean, like, you didn't really start having all this influx until Japanese wrestling got really popular in the U.S.
Yeah,
right, and we could sort of say, well, new age of AEW took all the talent, but if they didn't go to AEW and they didn't want to be in Japan, like where else are you going to go? You go to WWE. Like, mm-hmm. I think that they were, it was one or the other. And we have seen people go to the other. Evil, I forget what they're calling Evil now in NXT.
Yeah, Evil and Hiromu Takahashi. But
Hiromu Takahashi. I mean, that it happened. Again, it does happen where they bounce to the other place too. AEW certainly had a lot more, but they have a direct relationship with New Japan. That's just, this is what happens when you just, when you can't pay your talent. I think that, mm-hmm. I think the major problem in New Japan is I think Gedo just lost his touch.
Yeah.
Like up until the pandemic, Gable was a hell of a booker. And like, I think Adani was too loyal to him. They should have removed him as the head booker a while ago. And they just haven't done that.
The problem is, and I think a lot of companies face this, like, okay, you remove the head booker. Who do you replace him with? You know, especially with you're going to want to replace him with somebody with a track record.
But it's not like Gato had a massive track record of booking big time promotions. Like he booked indies in Japan before this.
Yeah. Yeah, because he was booking indies, but you know, it's, they were in a different space at that time, you know, whenever they brought him in. He did a great job for a long time. Pandemic definitely hurt, losing a lot of his stars definitely hurt. And then he just did not get that next crop, like the crop that was supposed to come in behind Okada and Ospreay and those guys. He just didn't get them ready.
Dude, that Ren Narita generation, man, we heard for years that was the next crop. And it's like Yoda Tsuji's doing all right. And like, we keep waiting. Like nobody else really popped. Like none of them. Like I think you have to look at that entire crew. And a lot of them, I think you got to blame on Gato himself for not getting behind him. Like he told the audience time and time again, none of these guys is ready. None of these guys is ready. None of these guys is ready. And eventually you're going to believe the company if they keep telling you that over and over again. So, I mean, like, dude, we pick on WWE, myself especially, but like they had an NXT a few weeks back where they introduced like 17 new people and told you these people are great. I mean, that's what you have to do as a promoter. You have to like sell. Gato never did that. And then again, the guy that he truly was behind the whole time, like the House of Torture was nothing but like Evil and Friends, and then Evil bounces too.
Yeah, and then he got married. So congratulations to him. I hope Evil does well.
They were married for a long time.
No, they were together, but I don't think they were actually married. So, but they hitch now because he's in the States now. So, good for him. Good for them.
Good for him. We out kicking his cover.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Last one, and then we're just going to hit some random topics just from the internet. So Lansig, JD, are you familiar with what Lansig is?
No.
It is Signal spelled backwards, and that has come back up again because of the TKO shareholder lawsuit. The TKO shareholders have filed a lawsuit against the TKO, Vince McMahon and Nick Khan and all those cats and Ari Emanuel, Mark Shapiro. Ari Shapiro is a comedian. They're funny comedian. I was listening to him earlier. Ari Shapiro has a new Netflix special. The title is just Jew. he's a Jewish guy, so he's just doing Jewish comedy. So I'm looking forward to seeing that, but sure, it's going to be very offensive, which I like. But the latest major development, on May 26th, Vice Chancellor J. Travis Laster, it's a name, issued a memorandum opinion imposing sanctions for spoliation of evidence against McMahon, Khan, and others. The judge ruled they acted recklessly by deleting potentially relevant messages on the Signal app despite legal preservation orders. During merger discussions in February 2023, Nick Khan texted Vince McMahon the single word, Langus. McMahon replied, "What in the blue hell is Langus?" Khan responded, "Read it backwards," with an exclamation point. Langus backwards equals Signal. The judge cited this as evidence of extensive back-channeling. Khan directed McMahon to move sensitive conversations off regular text into the encrypted Signal app, which allows auto-deleting messages. Plaintiffs argued this showed an intent to conceal or avoid preserving communications related to the WWE sale. The exchange came up in the context of McMahon texting Khan about WrestleMania creative, even though McMahon had supposedly stepped back from day-to-day operations at the time. So that is back. Lansig is or Langus. Did I say Langus?
You said Lansing, and I'm like, what the fuck Lansing. Is he talking about?
Should be I spelled it wrong. It's Langus. Langus. the signal app was like a big issue in the military for a little bit because our dopey Secretary of Defense got he added a Atlantic reporter to a chat where they were putting out classified information about strikes on Iran. So
Secretary of War, sir, show your former boss, and he pulled a Vince time, Russo.
He did. Yeah, he invited Mike Johnson to the group chat. But Langus was back in the news. So that is the latest development on the shareholder thing. I just thought that was pretty funny.
It is hilarious. Like, I don't know. Like, Vince McMahon's such a baby boomer. What are you trying to say? Like,
what? He legit said, "What in the blue hell is Langus?"
Mark felt the man was not as far as keeping things secret.
No. He is not deep throat. Although I've heard some rumors about him. Maybe he is. I don't know. Hey-o.
Road Warrior Hawk had some theories.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Hey, JD, did you know that there's some hipsters and slow adults on social media right now trying to rewrite history and say that Stone Cold Steve Austin was not a good wrestler? Are you aware of this?
You screenshotted this and sent it to me last night, and I was having a rotten evening as it was. And I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me.
I'm glad I made it worse.
I saw that. I'm like, I hate people so much. And then you show me that at least Royce Isaac was burying his ass. I'm like, all right, I feel better about the world. Like, this idea that Steve Austin couldn't work is just like, it's the dumbest bunch of shit ever. Like, the man was literally paralyzed from the neck down for a good 10 minutes and then found a way to battle through. And people take that as, well, Steve Austin wasn't really a good pro wrestler. He was just a gimmick. And it's like, motherfuckers, do you know, like, did you watch anything ever? God damn.
Yeah, he was like a really good, like, in the ring wrestler, like doing the moves and the horse shit and all that stuff when he was younger. But then when he got hurt, he just became a brawler. And so he had to like alter his style. Yeah. And he was a great brawler. And he turned out to be probably one of the better brawlers ever, right? Like, he ended up having a generational run of his life based off of his brawling and, well, of course, his personality and his promos and the whole total package. Like, not everything is what is scientific wrestling or high flying wrestling or whatever you can do in between the ropes. There is a full package that wrestlers need to have in order to make a lot of money, and Steve Austin had fucking it.
Yeah, absolutely. And people knew it from the get-go. That's why WCW hired him when he was 1 year into the business and immediately put the TV title on him, because they're like, oh, this kid's good. Now, I will argue to the death of me that Steve Austin was like, real. The injury happened. He changes his style after August of 97, right? Owen Hart dropped him on his neck. Steve Austin was already the fastest rising star in the WWF before that happened. In April of that year, him and Bret Hart had an amazing fucking match that ended with this gory, phenomenal finish that people remember. But the rest of the matches worked fantastically. And they had a match that was almost as good the November before that. So this idea that Steve Austin only became famous because he became a brawler is, you know, what's the phrase, causation? I forget. It's causation is equal. Fuck, I don't know. I'm having one of those nights tonight, man. Yeah. I was writing all day, and all my good words and creativity are already gone. Causation is unequal correlation, something.
Yes.
Anyway, people say he wouldn't have gotten that famous unless he changed his style, which is complete bullshit. Like,
no.
Steve Austin maintained the stardom that he was, the rocket that he was already on, right? And he made it work. Steve Austin, the Steve Austin of 1997 would have had better matches had he not gotten hurt, and his career would have been longer and we would have gotten more of it. If anything, the injury slowed down what could have been something. Now imagine how good he could have been overall. He could have been the greatest. One could say he's the greatest of all time, but he could have had the work rate and the promos. The problem is he got really hurt and had to figure out a way to make his shit work. And he did, yeah, because he fucking Austin, but we can't pretend like the man was terrible because he was a phenomenal athlete to begin with.
Yes, yes, he was an amazing athlete, and he played like linebacker and fullback in North Texas State, which, mm-hmm, I mean, he wasn't like a world beater there, but like you have to be a pretty good athlete to play for that college. That's, and he had a full ride scholarship there. So, mm-hmm, I mean, it was a small school, but it's still, you know, Division One. It's Division One. This is Division Two.
I thought it was Division Two at the time. I don't know. It was either either 1AA or Division Two. Like, regardless, yeah, you got to be pretty damn good to play football there.
Yeah. Right. And then he started what? I think he started in 89 in the USWA. And then like by 1991, he was in WCW on a full-time contract.
So Chris Adams, right? One of the all-time great carnies, was his trainer. Chris Adams immediately worked with Steve Austin. Immediately. Like the first thing that Steve Austin did in professional wrestling was a feud with his trainer, Chris Adams, because Chris Adams knew he could make a shit ton of money with this guy, who didn't know anything, right? Yeah. But immediately, this Mick Foley in his book talks about how he was watching Chris Adams school at some of those old Texas shows, and he immediately singled Steve Austin out. I'm like, that guy's got it. Because he was a big, giant, ripped dude with blonde hair who was handsome as shit and athletic. Yeah. Of course that man was going to make it.
Yeah.
Like, you have to try to fail when you look like Steve Austin, like, which a lot of pro wrestlers manage to do that.
Yeah, because you had similar guys like at the time that just didn't have it. Like, they didn't work hard enough. They didn't like train hard enough. I mean, they were in the gym. They're taking the steroids. They're doing that stuff, but they weren't like hitting the ropes with everything you got. They weren't sponges asking questions. Like, Van Hammer came around at the same time. He just recently died, by the way. Absolutely. Rest in peace. But like, they gave everything to that guy, and he just didn't have it, right? But, you know, Steve Austin had to work his way up to the USWA and eat potatoes, and he always tells the story of tuna cans and potatoes and feuding with Chris Adams. And then, like, you know, he got one over on Chris. He stole his wife.
Yeah, he did. True story.
Then took her to WCW. she became his manager there, and then he eventually, like, he went to Paul Heyman, right? And did the whole, what was the name?
Superstar Steve Austin.
Stunning Steve Austin with
Stunning Steve in the Dangerous Alliance. Yeah. But you said Dungeon, Paul Heyman. I thought you meant when he brought him to ECW as
No. Paul Heyman was his manager on the Dangerous Alliance. Yes.
I knew that.
Early 90s. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't mean for this to become just the biography of Stone Cold, but fuck it, since we're here.
Why not? We're here. Yeah.
He was fantastic, like from the beginning, right? Like, you could tell the guy just had it. And the only reason he left WCW is he was pretty miserable. He got hurt and Hulk Hogan came in and he just saw that he wasn't going to go anywhere, so they fired him while he was hurt. And he went to ECW, what, 95, I think. Mm-hmm. And then was just cutting promos, and like Jim Ross called him up and brought him over to WWF in 96, and the rest is history. Just had a freaking generational run, man.
So you can watch Steve Austin's career in WCW and see that they immediately have eyes on him to be an eventual world champion. He comes in 91 as like just Stunning Steve Austin, right? They give him the TV title pretty quick out of the shoot, right? And then he becomes like the prodigy player of the Dangerous Alliance. Like, he's essentially what, you remember Evolution, right? In WWF, he's essentially given the Randy Orton role, or kind of like what they've done with Austin Theory a million times, right?
but he sucks. Theory is a star in theory, right?
Yes.
Like, Theory, he has the look, he has the athleticism, he has the body, he can do the moves. He doesn't have it. He doesn't have what Stone Cold had, right? And they're trying to force feed him down your throat. Theory is Van Hammer. Stone Cold is, you know, Stone Cold, right? Like, there's a difference, you know?
So he becomes the young star of the Dangerous Alliance. He's essentially mentoring under Rick Rude. Which he's watched a lot of young Stunning Steve Austin stuff, a lot of Rick Rude-isms in there, right? And then, like, they immediately, he was going to get that U.S. title run, but the truth is Rude wasn't quite done yet. So while they were still using Rude in the U.S. title picture, they put him with Brian Pillman as a makeshift tag team that immediately becomes one of the most legendary tag teams of the 1990s. And they were together for like 7 months. But it is, if you go back and watch the Hollywood Blondes, they were the shit. They were awesome. I remember being 13 watching when these guys are the best. They're going to be the best tag team ever. And then when the team splits, Steve Austin immediately goes back on that trajectory. He's got the U.S. title. He's feuding with Dustin Rhodes. Like, you can see that they're warming up to eventually him versus Sting, right? That's going to be a thing. And then Hulk Hogan comes in and Steve Austin hurts his knee, the first knee injury that started to slow him down a little bit. And then it's derailed because he wasn't one of Hogan's guys.
Yeah, he lost the U.S. title to Hacksaw Jim Duggan, of all people, who was, I love Hacksaw. I mean, he was great in Mid-South, but he was cooked at that point.
And he lost he was just a big seconds.
Yeah, he was just a big fat guy with a 2x4 in 1994. He wasn't the same guy from Mid-South in 1983. Let's see, Damian Redman says, Theory had it in Evolve. So Theory has what is called small room charisma. Theory was doing well. Austin Theory was doing well in Evolve when Evolve was running nightclubs and bars and things like that. It just is, it has not translated. No matter what they do, they keep repackaging the guy.
Refresh my memory. Who was Austin Theory's big rival in Evolve?
I didn't watch a single thing. Like, it's other Darby than highlights and Darby Allin. Okay.
So
Darby's doing pretty well.
Yeah. I'm just gonna leave that. I'm just gonna leave that right there. You know,
he's doing well in AEW. I don't think Darby would have done well in WWE because, like, as you can see, he doesn't look like Austin Theory.
You know? Darby's the first person to tell you that he wouldn't have done well. And he's but that's the thing is, like, Gabe went all in on Austin Theory, and Darby got to be the guy who got his ass kicked by Austin Theory and got over getting his ass kicked. Boy, that's what Darby gets over doing. But I mean, like I said, they were going to make they made the centerpiece of Evolve Austin Theory. And, you know, it's essentially basically what Tony's done with AEW with MJF in the Austin Theory. Yeah. By the way, MJF much better than Austin Theory. He does have it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's not about size. It's not about, like, looks and body, like, and those things help. Don't get me wrong, but it's like when that green light comes on, is what you're doing translating to the audience? I don't care if you do 1,000 moves and your kickouts are really well timed. Like, I love Roderick Strong. He's never going to be over because his stuff just doesn't translate to television and make people care, right? He's a really good wrestler, but he's never going to make people care the way that a guy like MJF does, or like what we saw in the Grande Americanos match from last night. Like, they made people care. Right. And it's a very unique trait to be able to do that. And only a few people have it.
Adam Cole was one of the least believable badasses of all time.
Yes. Great. Right.
Look at him, you're like, this dude couldn't beat up my dog. But then he gets in the ring and that dude would just ooze charisma as a baby face, as a heel, didn't matter. He could get over. Like, and he had to, if you had, like, I'll be this guy, if you had Adam Cole's charisma and Austin Theory's body, you would have Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah.
that's the guy.
No.
That's it.
Yeah. If you had MJF's charisma and Austin Theory's body, you know what I mean? Yeah, for sure. But Austin Theory, it's like the lights are on and nobody cares. It's just like, and I'm not trying to be a dick, but, you know, that's just true. Like, but there's a spot for him on the card, right? He can do things on the card, but he's not going to be the guy that's going to sell tickets or merch or anything like that. Let's see.
I got
Theory is.
Oh yeah. I was going to pull the exact same way you were. Okay, our heads were in the exact same spot. Go ahead.
He makes a good point. He says Theory is only 27. Maybe he will get there. He's not going to get there in this company. He's got to go learn a new hold in a different territory for a while.
So Steve, I'll go back to this. Steve Austin was, someone put Tully Blanchard. That's exactly what Steve Austin was. He was essentially Tully Blanchard. The very similar characters, very similar things. His charisma was good, but it didn't jump across the screen. He really was like a Tully Blanchard, Arn Anderson type. You saw he had it, but like Brian Pillman was the dude in the Blondes. Like Brian was the charisma guy. Like Steve never quite had it. That side of it, that's what really derailed him. That's why Hogan really and Bischoff didn't really get behind him, because they didn't think Steve Austin had it from the charisma side. They thought he was Austin Theory. And then he got really fucking pissed off when he got fired and found it in ECW, right? And like, and that's the thing, is people knew it was there. They just kind of gave up on him because it didn't jump off the screen. Now it did earlier in his career, but again, a couple injuries and stuff like that might, they, it can kind of get you jaded and you get into a down spot. And now you can, when you're in a down spot, you can do one of two things. You can surrender or you can get really fucking pissed off. Steve Austin got really fucking pissed off. And you watch those ECW promos. That's where Stone Cold was born.
Yeah. And he stopped being a Hollywood blonde and he went back to being a Texas redneck, right? That's angry about the world. And when he's angry, that's when he's at his best. And he's actually like super funny too. He's just, he's got really good, really good comedic timing as well. But that came out when he was angry too. So we'll see. Like I remember watching Theory beat John Cena and I was just like, I thought it was the dumbest thing in the world. I was like, guys, like this guy just doesn't have it. And he beat John Cena at WrestleMania. It reminded me of Fandango beating Jericho at WrestleMania. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like Fandango, he had the dance and he had the song, but he didn't have anything else. Like the, he just like, he, here's some people just aren't stars.
Here's, and maybe you're right. The problem with Austin Theory is this is a guy who's 27. He's 27. He's been on WWF mainstream television since he was 23, maybe 22 even. Yeah. Like, this man has never really tasted destitute. I don't think, like, I think he's a guy. Now, I'm like, maybe I'm gonna be a dick for saying this, but I think he's a guy who's been given a lot. He's been given a lot of opportunity. He was Gabe's special little project in Evolve. So, and he got pushed to the Evolve title almost immediately upon entry because of how he looks. Because you look at the guy, you think he's got everything. This is a guy who's never really been down. And now people say, well, he's had injuries. This, no. Steve Austin had a six-figure job that he lost. And all he had was a pay was a couple bucks from the guy who was bouncing checks left and right. He had nothing but a chip on his shoulder and really nothing left to lose at that point. And he went all in on that. Now, if Austin Theory finds himself in that spot, and again, that was Cody Rhodes too. Cody Rhodes had a bunch of opportunities, but never really quite got into it because he wasn't given the big opportunity. He said, fuck you, I'm going to go make this. Cody Rhodes got a massive chip on his shoulder, and look what happened, right? Sometimes
Drew McIntyre.
Drew McIntyre is another great example of that, right? Sometimes you need to taste destitute a little bit and get really fucking pissed off to find if you have it. Because a lot of the people who get released from WWE are like, well, that was fun. Time to do something else.
Yeah. Hold on. Hey guys. No. Austin Theory and TNA would not be awesome. Like, let's stop. I do not want to see that man in TNA. Like, yeah. I have a TNA podcast. I don't want that. Because, like, who tripping on Tang says, they need to tell Austin to fuck off and Noah or All Japan for a year. That would be like Noah for sure. It's like for a year. That'd be cool.
I don't think his work is that bad though. Like, people will say that we should go to Japan. That's what you do if somebody can't work. I think Austin Theory's work is fine. I think Austin Theory has trouble connecting here.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think anybody believes him. I think he's one of those guys they say plays wrestler, right? Like, he's in the ring, he's solid belly to belly. I don't think he's an amazing wrestler, but I think there's been guys that have been successful with way less potential than he has. Like, I think his issue is I don't think Austin Theory really knows what Austin Theory is, right? What is he? What is Austin Theory? Like, why, what is he? Explain Austin Theory. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I couldn't even begin to tell you what the hell he is. Isn't he Grayson Waller's tag partner, or is that somebody else?
No, that was him.
That was him, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he gets a haircut, and then now he's in the Vision because Paul Heyman just happens to like him.
But not everyone that Paul Heyman likes gets great. Like, I mean,
no.
Curtis Axel.
Poor guy. He had a tough week.
Incredible, I hope he's doing well. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, he got poor guy got DUI. I hope he is doing. First one that popped in my head that was a Paul Heyman guy that didn't quite click. But there was a bunch of guys in ECW too that Paul Heyman like believed in who just didn't, it's not all, oh man, he's got the magic touch and everybody he works with becomes great. Like, not always. I think he's got more hits than misses. I really do. But some of his misses are not bad. You know, like, it's not
really. Yeah, there's some big misses there for sure. Let's see him in AAA. That could be interesting. See what he's got in AAA. That worked out for Kaiser and Chad Gable. So,
Yeah, but those guys, I mean, I don't know about Kaiser, but I know Chad Gable's always shown that he has personality. Yeah. What hurts Chad Gable is he's 5'9". And that really matters in that company. That's the only thing that's ever stopped Chaz from being like a main eventer there. I truly believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. So JD, this Thursday, BQ will be back on Brace for Impact. So I want to promote that. He'll be back live on our YouTube channel and his YouTube channel. We do a co-stream. We try to do once a month, once every other month, but he's available this Thursday. So we're going to do it. And it's going to be a call-in. So we'll be popping the StreamYard link in the chat so people will be able to call in, because TNA is having a rough go, JD. They are cooked. They're beyond cooked. They're done. They squandered their latest opportunity with AMC, and I don't know that there's any going back. So we're going to have a morning session on Thursday.
Define what you mean by that. Are you just saying this from a creative perspective, or has their business started to shit too?
JD, Slammiversary is less than a month away. Last year's Slammiversary did about 7,000 tickets in New York. This year they're in Boston, still a big city. And last year in Boston, they were in Lowell and they did over 6,000 tickets. Mm-hmm. Right now, less than a month away, they have 1,200 tickets out for Slam. They've announced two matches, just a random ladder match. We don't know who's in it, and an Ultimate X match.
There's going to be a ladder. They just said there's going to be a ladder match and didn't tell you who's going to be in the match.
We have no idea who's in it. There's no storylines happening right now, like that are worth anything. There's like people bumping into each other, just like typical old stuff. It's bad. They have a show on July 1st in Albany, and July 2nd in Albany that has less than 300 tickets out both nights. It's dire. They are not doing good.
So we're back here. So they were able to take all that love they got from the WWE partnership last year. They got a TV deal and they threw it in neutral.
They did. Yeah. They're resting on their laurels. They need a change in creative direction. I went hard on them last week. I was real tough on them. Gerard wrote an article. He was real tough on them. Like there's like Wrestling Observer did a whole thing about it. Like it's bad. They threw away their latest opportunity and the people are pointing the finger at the Tommy Dreamer. And I think it's appropriate. So, but we'll have BQ on and he's got some contacts there in the company and we'll talk about it and we'll do a call in and we'll let people speak their mind. I do know that people from the company watch my shows. They interact with my tweets a lot, but you just can't see it because the likes are hidden. So, but I do know a lot of people agree with me that's in the company. Things need to change. It's pretty tough. I almost didn't do my show last week because the show was just bland, but I was like, well, I have a Patreon, so I have to come through with it. But I just did it. And I just took an hour to trash the company. It's like not trash. Like I buried the creative and like presented some ideas on how to get better, you know? And so that's where we're at, but yeah, TNA not doing good. It's pretty rough sledding there. So
everything we said about Gato can be applied to Tommy Dreamer too.
Yeah. Tommy Dreamer and Delirious. So there you have it. So tune in this Thursday night on Brace for Impact. But that's going to do it for us this week on the Mike and JD Show. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game.
Wrestling Omakase brings you a full course meal of all of Japanese wrestling, men's and women's. Join me, a Japanese wrestling fan for over 20 years, along with a rotating cast of equally knowledgeable co-hosts, as we cover everything from New Japan and Stardom to NOAH, All Japan, DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Mari Gold, Sendai Girls, Dragon Gate, Gleet, Ice Ribbon, and even more stuff. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling and you want coverage of the entire scene in one podcast, check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network each and every week. Get us wherever you get podcasts today.